Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Two news stories today, Fred. Reasonably recent developments. One from outer space here in the solar system, and the other from the plant kingdom. That story blows my mind.
Oh, they are both really cool.
Yeah, so this is going to be fun, but could we start? You know, it's the holidays. Maybe we should take a more relaxed approach. Usually I'm all worked up, you know.
Yeah, I get so tense, you know, shooting apples in a barrel all the time. It just makes me all wound up.
It is. When we have debates with naturalists, materialists, atheists, it feels like we're cheating because we know the answers. We make
right.
predictions, and our confirmation rate on our science predictions. If somebody Googles creation science predictions, I think we're right up there at the top. And it's stunning how many have been confirmed. And maybe on tonight's show, maybe we'll make a prediction or maybe not a prediction, just something that they might find up there on an asteroid. But Fred, first, I thought we could make some news on today's broadcast.
I can't wait to hear it.
Okay. I've decided to become the first Coloradan to publicly announce that I'm definitely not running for the Democratic presidential nomination for 2020.
That's huge, Bob. It's so rare.
I'm not throwing my hat into the ring.
Let me guess. You don't have enough American Indian. Is that what did it?
Well, I have more than Pocahontas.
You probably have more than Pocahontas.
I'm sure I do. Cheryl does. We all have way more than Elizabeth Warren, so, but no, I decided not to run. I just thought I would announce that publicly. I think if everyone announces publicly who's decided they're not going to run, it'll simplify trying to figure out who is going to run.
Fred, you did something like that a long time ago.
Yeah, that's right. Back in the 90s, we were encouraging women in the audience to send in depositions. We'd collect them all and send them off to Washington if they had not been assaulted by Bill Clinton. Because that would help, you know, simplify the task.
Yeah, because the easier task would
to figure
find someone who had not.
Right, exactly. Anyway, so the first story from the plant kingdom comes from a paper published in Frontiers in Plant Science in 2017. But a really fabulous scientist down in Dallas, his name is Jeffrey Tompkins. He's with ICR. He wrote this article about plants and how they communicate. High-tech plant communication, how awesome it is, and how and why it could not have evolved.
Is this guy qualified to write an article on this?
Well, Fred, Jeffrey Tompkins, you know, he's a really neat guy, I'll say that.
Yeah, because, you know, evolutionists like to point out
they
how,
like
you know,
to make fun of
so-called scientists.
Yeah,
and, you know.
Well, let's see. This is on plants, how plants communicate. He does have a B.S. in agriculture from Washington State University.
Okay.
I'd say that gets him in the ballpark, would you think?
I think so.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm looking at his bio here at ICR, Institute for Creation Research. He also has an M.S. in plant science from the University of Idaho.
Idaho.
I think that pretty much Oh, wait. He also has a Ph.D.
Oh, he has a Ph.D.
in genetics from Clemson University. So
don't they just play football at Clemson?
Yeah, I would say Dr. Jeffrey Tompkins is qualified to share with us the incredible discoveries that were published in this peer-reviewed journal, Frontiers in Plant Science. And what he's going to do is press the question to the evolutionist, how could that evolve? How could that evolve? And since plants are communicating, Fred, all communication is symbolic. Communication is symbolic.
Yep.
If you say to someone, I live in a nice house, you're not shoving your house into their head. You're not doing that. You're using symbols, verbal or written.
Yeah, that have semantics to them. They have meaning.
Yes.
I have to be able to decode that.
Yes.
If you just threw a house at me, I'm like, wow.
You wouldn't even know what that was.
What does that mean?
If you squeezed your house into somebody's head, they wouldn't know that you were trying to communicate that you live in a nice house.
Yeah.
In fact, Jamie just bought a house.
Oh, he did. Our producer just did.
2 weeks ago.
Really
cool. Beautiful house.
It is.
Yeah. Just in time for the holidays. So when you communicate, there needs to be a code, and there is encoding and decoding.
Yep.
And so there has to be multiple parties, and they have to have an agreed-upon symbolic system. That's what communication is about.
Yeah, we call it information science for one thing.
Yes.
And we know that you can't have information without an intelligent information giver.
Right, exactly.
So this article really gets to the heart of that. I mean, I love it. It gets into plants communicating both wirelessly.
Yeah, through the air.
Through the air and through a wired network.
Come on, what do you mean through a wired network? Now, I know if people listen to this show, they have heard for many years us say, I can remember saying this 20 years ago, that if a tree is attacked by a fungus, insects, whatever, it will produce a signal and communicate to other trees as far as a mile away, and those trees will begin to build their defense mechanism to fight off that particular attack, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, and that's wireless, right? It's going over the air.
It's like a cell phone.
It is. You know, yeah. I used to work for a company, and we did cell phone technology. Just real quick, really
yeah.
kind of a funny story.
Yeah.
My boss was Chinese, and she had just talked to some Chinese group in China, of course.
Yeah.
And she drew something on the board. I'm like, Kuang Yi, I don't speak Chinese. She goes, oh, no, Fred, that's a cell tower.
yeah, that's a good
we
one.
We both still laugh about that yeah. to this day.
I like that. In fact, Fred, I was telling a guy from Taiwan that the word right often means not only to your right hand, but it means correct in different languages. And he got all excited. He gets out a piece of paper. We're flying to Chicago. He gets out a piece of paper and he does the pictograph for right. And he says, this means this hand, and it also means correct.
Oh, it does in Chinese?
Cool.
Oh, that
yeah.
is.
You know,
wow.
The Bible says the good man's heart is on his right,
yeah.
and the fool's heart is on his left.
It does say that.
Yeah.
Yep. It also says in that same passage that he who goes to the left is stupid.
Wow.
It really says that in the Bible.
I have a new proof text.
Yeah.
So, okay, to get to Dr. Tompkins' article, High-Tech Plant Communication Glorifies the Creator. He writes, Fred, let's read a good chunk of this article. Jeffrey writes that modern societies exchange information through high-tech communication systems, like you said, wireless and hardwired. Well, we've only learned how to do that very recently in human history. The lowly plant kingdom, he writes, the seemingly lowly.
Yeah.
Because when the atheist talks about a simple life form, we say, yeah, right, show us one of those.
Yeah, they like to throw in the word simple. You
right.
know, it's kind of an illusion. So
right.
There's nothing simple in God's creation.
Comparatively, compared to other organisms, there are less complex organisms, but the simplest possible living cell is wildly complicated.
Oh, absolutely.
So he says that the seemingly low plant kingdom has been doing this hardwired and wireless communication since creation. And that's cool. That's like 7,000 years ago. Surprisingly, communities of plants contain both wireless and hardwired communication systems. And then he says these are all or nothing complex systems, and they're impossible to explain through bit by bit random evolutionary processes. Fred, when we describe how the plants are communicating, I think you might fall off your chair. When
yeah.
you hear
and if you're
what they're doing.
And if you're an evolutionist, because we know some of you listen, try to imagine how that could evolve, and please call us, and we can talk about it.
Yeah, that's a great idea. In fact, our number, 800-8-NYART, it's been the same for years, and on the show we've taken many thousands of calls. But when we went to a short form, a half hour, we pretty much stopped
it's
taking calls.
To do that,
but
yeah.
we still do.
Occasionally.
800-8-NYART, 800-836-9278. Or if somebody wants to subscribe to our videos, really fun videos, Bible study sermons, the classic Bob in Your Life TV shows, you could call that number or go to our store, rsr.org. Just click on the store. And this time of the year is when a lot of outreaches really need revenue so they could stay on for another year. And boy, we could use your help too. So I'm glad you brought up.
Yeah, because AM 670 here in Denver doesn't pay you, right, Bob, to use their airwaves.
Well, they don't. And you know what's interesting, Fred? Just a couple weeks ago, I was interviewed by another talk show host here in Denver. In that half-hour interview on RSR, The Recent Discoveries, it aired four times on a Thursday and Friday between three different Denver radio stations.
That is so cool.
So that was a blessing. Okay, so Dr. Tompkins continues. A recent discovery in a commonly studied plant called Arabidopsis.
Say that 10 times really fast.
Arabidopsis.
That's pretty good.
They found out that when this plant is wounded, typically that would be by an insect. Mm-hmm. It might be by your kid in the backyard with a BB gun, but it could be, typically it's an insect. It sends out an airborne chemical signal to its neighbors to warn them of the danger. Now, that's really interesting.
The plot thickens.
As a materialist, start to think through, okay, why would a plant do this? Now, these are called pheromones. A hormone is a chemical signal within an organism,
mm-hmm.
from maybe your pituitary gland to whatever, telling your body, hey, get ready to do something. A pheromone is a chemical signal between organisms. So one plant is being injured, being eaten by an insect, and it sends out a message, not an SOS, but a beware, there's danger afoot.
So the plant that's receiving that doesn't just say, hey, so I just got a pheromone. Pheromone received. What do I do with this?
Right.
I guess I just sit here and do nothing.
Yeah. The whole system. For one, the plant that's being damaged needs to know to send out this chemical message, a wireless, you know, a Wi-Fi message.
Yeah.
And it has to have a certain form in which the receiver is going to recognize it and process it and then respond. And that whole system has to work to confer a survival advantage. So why would any part of it start to evolve until the whole system was functioning, not within one organism, but within a population?
Yep.
So Jeffrey continues, when the signal is received, it triggers a whole host of incredible responses. Immediately, the forewarned, uninjured plants show a marked increase in root growth. Oh, why would they rapidly start growing roots? To obtain more soil nutrients to strengthen their defenses. That's pretty smart.
That is.
In addition, the plants produce more of a chemical called malate that attracts beneficial soil microbes that bond with the roots that increases the plant's defenses.
Wow.
So suddenly
it starts building up all these defense mechanisms.
Yes, right. Imagine that. You need to attract microbes in the soil because they're going to help fortify your roots. You're going to start growing roots more rapidly. That reminds me of fish in a lake where there's no predator, and they produce a certain number of eggs, and they mature in a certain number of weeks or months. Then you introduce a predator, and the very next generation of fish that lay eggs, they lay more eggs, and they mature more rapidly.
Wow.
So there are communication mm-hmm. between species that affect species and even affect future generations, but not like the Darwinist thinks randomly. If it was random, Fred, then you introduce a predator and the fish think, well, let me try producing fewer eggs and we'll see how that works. It's so ridiculous, right?
It really is.
Yeah.
So these plants that are on the defensive, they had to have known, they had to decode this message. They had to know what it meant. And it's actually very complex how that all works.
Yes. And we're not saying they knew what it meant intellectually,
exactly.
Like they have a mind.
Yeah.
Because we know biblically that God made us body, soul, and spirit. He made some animals with a soul, a depth or a quality of their existence where they can actually have relationship at some rudimentary level with other animals or even with human beings. But then there are insects. I think it was a huge classification mistake in taxonomy to say that insects are animals.
Oh, yeah.
Huge
absolutely.
Mistake.
Doesn't fit the Bible.
They should have been a separate classification in taxonomy, and we should have had another kingdom. Insects should have been their own kingdom. So the plants don't have a soul, so they're not aware, which means they cannot feel pain. Pain, you have to be aware to feel pain. And they can't intellectually process information, but they are processing the information nonetheless, like a cell phone processes incoming
like
packets.
Like a robot, you know, the work we did. It's the receiving component does it either in programming language, an if or a switch statement, and decides what it's going to do based on the signal it received, and it has a different set of options it'll do.
Yes.
In this case, it gets a signal that says, hey, predator alert, and he knows the plant, or the plant knows to immediately start building up defense.
That was hate speech. How do you know it wasn't a she?
Oh, that's,
how do you know it wasn't an it? How do you not know it wasn't a plural something or other?
Yeah, it was a transplant.
Okay. All right. So, Fred, transplant. Okay. Imagine the noise. You know, you have a signal to noise ratio where you got to find the signal in all this noise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a tree. Let's take a tree or a weed or whatever, a plant. Think of the trillions of microbial interactions it has every second, every single second. And out of all that noise, it has to find the signal that's telling it, do this so that you can survive. Now, when a plant, or say the bark beetle here in Colorado that has devastated tens of thousands of acres of forest in the mountains, a plant cannot always fend off every type of pathogen or microbe or insect. They can't always do it. The perfect creation has fallen, and the cosmos, the world, is under the curse.
Yep.
And so things have broken down. But it's so awesome that a plant could find the signal in the midst of the noise. Now imagine a Darwinian mechanism. Well, where there is a plant, and unbeknownst to it, its second cousin has decided to lend a hand and send a signal that I'm under attack from this type of threat. So now, of the trillions of microbial interactions per second in above ground and below ground, it needs to find that signal out of the noise and then process it in the correct manner.
I just had a thought.
Yeah.
What if part of that noise and preventing the signal from making it through to the tree, what if it was Al Gore hugging that tree?
Al Gore.
Would it get through?
No.
The signal get through? It might.
Well, wait a minute. He invented the internet, and this is very much like
Internet. That is true. Yeah. So there's a lot of parallelism.
So if you have a tree hugger, if you have transplants.
Yeah, transplants and tree huggers.
Yeah. Yeah. So as Dr. Tompkins points out in this article, this is an all or nothing system. This is irreducibly complex. He doesn't use that term. But let's continue then, Fred, because he goes on to say that if this type of wireless communication used by plants above ground weren't impressive enough, and what he's about to explain is going to blow people's minds.
Yeah.
If you're driving, pull over. Okay? It's one thing to fall off a chair. It's another thing to just crash because you're elated. If this weren't impressive enough, scientists have discovered a hardwired network that's even more incredible because it utilizes an underground fungus as a data conduit.
Now, there's a good use for fungus. I always wondered what we could use fungus for. Now we know.
Well, this highly efficient system acts as a kind of biological internet that allows entire communities of plants to readily and effectively communicate as a group.
Wow. That would be so efficient, too. And, it's amazing.
And he's going to explain it a little more, but this fungus network in the soil, they're sending signals through the fungus that's a different species than the
totally
plants.
Totally different species, a symbiotic relationship.
That is so exciting. Fred, at DU, University of Denver, their number one course on campus is remedial English. And I know that because I was reading the campus newspaper, and it was a front page story. They were bragging about it.
That's
This is their mother tongue. The vast majority of the students with remedial English, the Japanese are great at English.
Yeah, exactly.
These are people from America who get to Duh and they don't know how to speak English. So at any rate, we're there at Duh for a debate on evolution. And after the debate, it was really great. We have a little video on our YouTube channel, rsr.org. Click on YouTube and go to the science playlist. And you'll see it from Duh after the debate, the after party. It was so fun, maybe 8 minutes or so. And this evolutionist is challenging me. We're going back and forth. I'm basically debating the evolutionist who was up on stage during the debate. And this evolutionist says, okay, if we get the first living organism, will you grant me that then we could explain the rest of all of life on Earth? If we get the first living organism, then Darwinism could explain the origin of all the rest of the species. Would you agree with that? And I said, well, no species could survive on its own. Every species uses, it's an ecosystem, uses biological services from other species. And when one species goes extinct, everybody's concerned. We realize, you know, like Obi-Wan, there's a disturbance in the Force. When one species goes extinct, that causes a real serious problem. How are you going to provide the biological services? And we know the way God designed the ecosystem is that he put tremendous redundancy in. But when you're the only species and you have to provide all your own biological services, there's not enough robustness in that design to let one species survive, let alone then all the millions of other species come into existence.
Yeah, and what a great point you made in that debate.
Well, thank you, Fred. You know, no plant is an island, right, so to speak. So Jeffrey goes on. Scientists had known for some time that mutually beneficial relationships exist between plants and certain types of fungi that colonize the soil around plants' roots. Ah, beneficial symbiosis. Yeah. Cool. These beneficial soil microorganisms, known as mycorrhizal fungi, help promote the plant's overall health and growth. The mycorrhizal fungi also enhance the plant's ability to cope with insect attacks, pathogens, and drought stress. Now, this is where it blows your
mind. Yeah, it gets even better. As it turns out, these fungi, or fungi, they
however you pronounce it.
Yeah, they play yet another role. So Dr. Tompkins goes on to say, as it turns out, plant-to-plant communication takes place through the release and detection of small molecules that traverse the soil through these fungi networks.
Oh, come on.
Amazing.
This is unbelievable. So the plant releases a molecule. The molecule passes through the fungi network like a data packet through a cell network or an Ethernet in your office or at your home. And it has to then obviously keep going until it gets to a receiver.
Yeah. There's lots of receivers in this case. It's amazing. So he goes on to say, these function as information superhighways connecting each of the plants in a community. The plants have built-in code and decode programming information to decipher what the different chemical combinations or concentrations mean. I mean, that's the heart of information science and technology.
Right. Encoding and decoding. Information is symbolic. And in fact, Fred, even the DNA molecule contains encoded information. It's symbolic, and the laws of physics and chemistry have no symbolic logic functions. Symbolism is not physical.
It's not at all.
Boy, you could drive an atheist nuts just pondering that. He can't figure it out, Fred. They can't figure out that symbolism is not physical. Like the ink on a page in a book, the ink molecules do not confer the meaning of the plot of the story. If you have Moby Dick, you have that story, it's not the ink molecules that somehow physically, the atoms inside the ink, confer the meaning. You can take that meaning and you can encode it on fiber optics with photons. Or you could say it, you can read it audibly through airwaves. There's so many ways. You could even encode it in DNA in a bacteria, the whole book, if you wanted to, and you had enough money.
Yeah. And, you know, like the memory sticks we put in our computer. If I weigh the memory stick Yeah. And then I download a book onto it or some computer program. Is the memory stick going to weigh more because I got more information on
it?
Well,
I would think so, Fred. Here's a book on the destruction of Sodom by an archaeologist we just interviewed, Dr. Sylvia.
Oh, yeah, that was a great show, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Wasn't that awesome? People can go to rsr.org and listen to it.
Yes, rsr.org/Sodom.
Yeah, the destruction of Sodom. 13 years excavating the site at Sodom, and everything reinforced Genesis 19.
Unbelievable how great that show was. But anyway, this book here, I have Dr. Sylvia's book, PhD, archaeologist. I'd say it's about a pound and a half.
Yeah, it's an average-sized book.
So if I get the ebook of this and put it on a flash drive, obviously that drive is going to be now a pound and a half heavier. No. And I could, in fact, transmit it at the speed of light on a fiber optic cable or wirelessly. And you know what? You can't send anything at the speed of light. Nothing physical can hitchhike on a photon. Photons can't bring other stuff with them. But yet we can transmit information at the speed of light because it's not physical.
Yeah, and that just drives evolutionists nuts. I mean, I've had evolutionists try to tell me that information does weigh something because, you know, there's atoms in that NAND drive. They're missing the entire point.
Right.
It doesn't matter what program.
They smoke too much pot.
I could tell them. I could make a prediction. If they really think it weighs something, they should be able to tell me, okay,
how much it weighs.
Mass, how much is it going to weigh, what more
is it,
or less?
A gigabyte,
based on
the terabyte.
Yeah. If I put the program, Microsoft Word on it, is it going to weigh more or less?
Yeah, right.
If they really know.
They're not.
They're not going to know.
They're potheads. Atheists are potheads. I mean, as a percentage of the population, more so than, well, way more than Bible-believing Christians who love the Lord.
Yeah, definitely.
That's for sure. So Fred, Dr. Tompkins continues, this amazing function is enabled by the thread-like fungus that grows underground like the fiber optic network connecting computers in an office building. When plants detect insects, such as aphids, piercing them and sucking out their juices, that sounds rough.
That does.
It triggers the release of specialized chemicals that not only help repel the aphids, but also attract certain types of wasps that feed on aphids.
Man, now, wouldn't you love to have the capability to have wasps as you kind of like your pets to attack your enemies?
Yeah, right.
At your beck and call?
You get some liberals harassing you down on the mall, and you just emit this pheromone, and the wasps come and sting
when
them.
Elizabeth Warren is claiming to be Indian, and you can just call on your wasps.
Right. So there's something else other than complexity. Fred, the intelligent design folks, they're always talking about complexity. And that's awesome because the atheists want everything to come from nothing, right? That's that's their main commitment, that everything came from nothing. Well, one of the problems they have is complexity. And even the atheists realize that when you start out, you don't have complexity. They want it to build up gradually. So the ID guys who tend to be old earth, not all of the intelligent design community are old earth, but most of them are.
Mm-hmm.
But they talk about complexity and they leave it there. And I wish they would go further. We creationists have to do a better job because complexity, it's like a Rube Goldberg machine. If you have something that's wildly complex to perform a little task, like turning on a switch. But before you turn on the switch, you go through a whole warehouse of complicated maneuvers, and then it turns on the switch and it turns on the lights, right? Well, you don't want complexity for complexity's sake. And something that's different than complexity is sophistication. And
yeah,
in programming,
so true.
When you are a programmer, if you can waste a billion bits of data to indicate something that another programmer did in, say, 1,000 bits of data, a kilobyte, then that other guy, he's a way more sophisticated programmer than you were because you're wasting.
Yeah.
You're wasting resources.
Reminds me of Shannon Information, which is the reduction of uncertainty.
Oh.
So the programmer, like you said, who is more efficient and takes what maybe one guy took millions of bits of code to do, and he does it in 1,000 bits.
Yeah.
That's an increase in information. It really is by definition of Shannon communication theory.
Wow. So,
because it's the reduction of uncertainty.
So then, Fred, you don't have just complexity, but you have sophistication where if you're performing multiple tasks in multiple seemingly unrelated tasks by the same function, then that's sophisticated. That's efficiency in the extreme.
And well, so, just like the DNA and it, the you know four letters and how it's so efficient as a storage mechanism, the redundancy that's built into it.
Yes, right.
Man can't match it.
Exactly. So here, the plant releases specialized chemicals that not only attract wasps, but they repel the aphids. They do both. That's pretty cool. That's designed at the ecosystem level and at the pheromone level, communication between species. So Jeffrey says, remarkably, the damaged plants are able to signal others connected through the fungal network to produce the same defense response.
You know, that reminds me when I got attacked by ticks. Have you ever had ticks all over you? I did at one time, and I had a reaction. I mean, I reacted very violently and started ripping those things off.
Oh, yeah. We flew back from New York State. We went to New York City, New York State, when our three youngest sons were real young. So the one is about 5 years old. And, you know, ticks, they come and go in their intensity on the East Coast, more so. We're putting our five-year-old to bed, and I just reach around the back of his head. You know how you're sort of, you know, you love your kids. I reach around the back of his head, and my finger feels little tiny insect legs moving rapidly.
Oh, man.
I turn him over, and I grab that thing and pull it out. I got the head and all. Sometimes the head
stays in. Yeah, you got to be careful.
And we quickly got our science lab that we got at home for homeschooling, put it in a specimen jar, and we went right to the hospital because I didn't know what it had or what kind of disease it might be carrying.
Yeah.
And they were thrilled to be able to see the species, and they, you know, up. And anyway, he was perfectly fine.
Wow.
But yeah.
Yeah, mine was in Missouri. I mean, Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry for our, I know we got Missouri listeners.
We got wonderful listeners.
Yes.
And it's a beautiful state. But so, Fred, we have Dr. Tompkins. He concludes, both of these comprehensive communication systems require the same sort of general mechanisms that human-engineered computer systems use. Specialized cellular machinery and logic are employed to not only compose the information-based message, but send it through either the air or the fungal network.
That's amazing. Either wireless or wired.
Yeah, isn't that great? To transmit the message, highly specialized airborne molecules are used for the wireless communication, while specific types of informational chemicals, along with the high-tech fungal conduit, are used to convey the hardwired data delivery underground. On the receiving end, highly specialized sensors, and it's got to be, right, to distinguish the signal to noise?
Oh, absolutely.
Highly specialized sensors.
To pick up on that particular type of chemical
and
the sequence it's in.
Interfaces, control systems, and logic put in motion a whole cascade of specific defense responses. Fred, they're morons. They're absolutely morons. Professing themselves to be wise, they become fools.
That was the first thought that went through my head, because isn't moron part of Romans 1?
Chapter 1.
You get the word moron out of there somewhere.
Well, yeah, and professing themselves to be wise, as the Apostle Paul wrote, they become fools. These all-or-nothing complex systems are impossible to explain, Jeffrey concludes, through bit-by-bit random evolutionary processes. Plant communication systems are incredible examples of God's handiwork in his creation. This also draws on research that was published in Ecology Letters, and these are just back in the last 3 to 4 years, these discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, great job, ICR.
Yep.
At bringing this to a wider public, because our public schools are not going to catch up to this kind of science for another 40 years.
At least.
They're not going to catch up to it, because it points to the Creator God.
Whose invisible attributes are clearly seen so that they are without excuse.
Wow.
Without excuse.
Clearly seen. So when Christians, Fred, say, well, you do need faith, you can't prove God's existence, those Christians are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because God doesn't send people to hell for rejecting something that might be true. What those Christians mean is at some point you have to take a leap of faith. but they are misunderstanding faith. Faith is the proper response to the evidence.
Yeah, Hebrews 11:1.
Hebrews 11:1. Faith is the evidence of things not seen. God says, this is all clearly seen, that I exist, that I'm the creator, and that I'm eternal and I'm powerful. And even we can infer from the creation and Romans 1 there that God is a personal God, the Godhead.
Yeah. Remember when John the Baptist was in prison and he actually started having doubts. Did Jesus tell him, ye of little faith?
Oh.
No. He said, go tell John the things I'm doing. You know, the people are rising from the dead, the sick are being healed. He's giving him evidence. Yeah.
And he said that people were offended. I like that too.
Yeah.
That was another piece of evidence that he was the Messiah.
Because the rock
were
of offense.
Offended. Yeah, that's right. So, Fred, that is a stunning discovery by amazing scientists who then should not add an evolutionary gloss like they're tithing. They have to put at least two sentences in their paper saying, isn't it
That's
amazing?
That's a good way to put it, tithing. Yeah, they have to do their tithing by saying, this evolutionary process
is so amazing.
They don't they'll say it's, and they won't explain how evolution could ever account for it.
No, it's magic words.
That's a good point. Tithing, that's good. I haven't heard you say that before.
That's
a really good way to put it.
In every major discovery, they have to tithe. If it's in the journal Nature or Science or really a thousand other journals, they have to tithe.
And they'll be accountable for all those
to their Darwinism.
Tithes.
Yeah. It's this evolutionary gloss that adds nothing, but in the reality, these discoveries overwhelmingly falsify a materialist explanation of origins. And it all points to, therefore, God is our creator. Fred, the discovery, this asteroid Bennu, it's called, that a NASA probe just arrived at recently. So fun. It's another Working for Walt Brown WWB discovery.
It is so cool. I wish we could have got to it, but I know we're out of time.
We are. Hydrated clay. How do you get clay up on an asteroid?
Wait, you said hydrated, too.
How do you get water in the clay? How do you get... Oh, it's so fun. We'll have to do a whole show on Bennu. And I want to thank our listener, David, from Lakeland, Florida, who first alerted us to the story. And he said, hey, Real Science Radio, another WWB discovery. And sure enough, Dr. Walt Brown with the hydroblade theory. If you don't know about it, go to one webpage, rsr.org/flood, and you'll find out what NASA cannot explain, why there is clay, hydrated clay with water in it, up in space on an asteroid.
Clay is not easy to make. I mean, there's specific things that make clay.
The USGS has a nice article on what you need to form clay.
Yeah.
So at any rate, it's like all the rounded boulders that make up asteroids and comets and all that. It's too much fun. And so, hey, we're out of time.
It makes for a very relaxing episode of Real Science Radio.
Yes. Supposed to
good
be
good time for the holidays.
So supposed to be anyway.
Yeah.
So this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the real Science Radio, keeping it real, that's what I'm talking about.